And once again, you're listening to the Cultured or Candid podcast. My guest host tonight will be...
Nick.
Nick, welcome back.
Thank you.
And I am once again your gracious host, Zach. And the film for discussion this evening will be 1988's Scrooged. It's a Christmas-themed podcast.
Ho, ho, ho.
Directed by Richard Donner, coincidentally the director of such films as Lethal Weapon and Superman. And Scrooged stars Bill Murray, Karen Allen, who you might remember from the Indiana Jones movies, Bobcat Goldthwait, Carol Kane, best known for me from an episode of Seinfeld, and Elfrey Woodard. Let's talk a little bit about the plot of Scrooged. This is basically a somewhat modernized, and I say somewhat modernized because it's 20 years old at this point, but it's a somewhat modernized retelling of the Charles Dickens classic A Christmas Carol. Bill Murray is playing the
Ebenezer
Scrooge, because the title of the film is Scrooged. Bill Murray is playing the Ebenezer Scrooge character. In this movie, however, his name is Frank Cross. He is a ruthless television executive. He's also kind of bitter, lonely. He's a workaholic. He's kind of mean to his employees, firing them on Christmas Eve, kind of forcing them to work late all the time, and generally being kind of a jerk to everybody.
Basically being Scrooge.
Basically being Scrooge, yeah. But with like an 80s twist to it, like in the Futurama episode. He's an 80s guy.
Very much, yeah.
So anyway, he begins to experience these supernatural phenomenon, similar to what Scrooge dealt with over the course of a long Christmas Eve evening. And it is through the interventions of these ghosts, as well as a deceased former boss, that Frank is able to see the error of his hard-working, stingy ways. And he, over the course of the film, he transforms from a lonely old miser into a happy-go-lucky young gentleman. And then he wins back his ex-girlfriend, etc., etc., and things go well for him in the end. I don't think it's a spoiler to say that at this point. This movie is 21 years old.
Yeah, plus it's based on a story that's been told and retold like a billion times. So.
I want to talk about that because I am extremely tired of the Christmas Carol formula because it seems like every single sitcom or TV show or what have you has done some derivation of it. I don't particularly mind it here because I feel like it adds something new to that formula, and the thing that it adds for me is the odd combination of horror and terror in a Christmas film.
If you read the original Christmas Carol, there is that element of horror and terror, especially when it comes to the Ghost of Christmas Future. In my opinion, a lot of the more serious adaptations, like I'm not counting like the Mickey Mouse or the Muppet version of Christmas Carol, which are good on their own, they really, when you have like the adaptations of a Christmas Carol, they really tone that element down, I think.
And I think they gloss over a lot of it, actually. There's a little bit of horror and terror when they get to the Ghost of Christmas Past, like a little teeny tiny bit, but it seems like Richard Donner is going all out and trying to scare the audience here, especially with the deceased boss, the Marley character, the Jacob Marley character, played in this movie by John Forsythe. And then with the Ghost of Christmas Future, which is just a very creepy animatronic 7-foot-tall puppet.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh. I'm just thinking of when Bill Murray looks inside the guy and then looks up thinking he's the actor from the movie.
Right.
And it's like, did our guys do that?
It's like, wow, those are really great special effects. We should talk about how this film was seen as helping to revive Bill Murray's career. Which is strange to me because it only comes a few years after Ghostbusters, but when you look at his filmography, he had only done like two films after Ghostbusters, and one of those films was just in a bit part, but he had made this film called Razor's Edge.
Which tanked.
Tanked, yeah, and he was really proud of it, and coincidentally, Razor's Edge is a very competent and very personal film, and if you haven't seen it, I would suggest even trying to track that down and watch it. But it's no surprise to me that it tanked in the box office because it is kind of like a small-time drama that it doesn't really have a... It's Bill Murray in a different dramatic role, one of the first times where he does that, so it's different from mainstream, popular 80s Bill Murray. But I digress.
Well, a lot of people don't realize, I think, that Bill Murray... from like 1984 to this movie in 88 wasn't in anything outside of maybe the oddball cameo here and there, and People seem to forget that they think Bill Murray was just rolling out another movie every year or so, and that definitely was not the case.
Because he had such a long streak. I mean, you go from Meatballs all the way to Ghostbusters, and he probably made like 6 or 7 films in that time period. And then for 4 years, he does basically one film and then a cameo in another film, which I guess counts, just sort of. But imagine taking the most popular comic actor of today and, wow, I don't even know who that would be. Maybe Adam Sandler, I guess, would be kind of an equivalent. Imagine taking Adam Sandler and then having him not star in a movie for 4 years. It seems odd, doesn't it?
Yeah, probably would.
I do remember as a kid being scared and somewhat disturbed by the scene where Bill Murray's deceased boss, the Jacob Marley character, again played by John Forsythe, comes back to warn him about the three ghosts. Watching it again nowadays, I do see the humor more clearly in it, but as a kid, and this came out when I was about 6 years old, and I don't remember when I first saw it, honestly, maybe in the early 90s, but I do remember that scene being quite terrifying. But now I watch it and I it's funnier, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, well, he whips him out of a window and his arm falls off. That's like very, very, it's scary, because it's so simply done. I don't know about you, but falling out of a high-rise like Bill Murray's character did in that scene can be very, very scary.
And it's also kind of funny because not once but twice in this film does someone not only draw a weapon in the workplace but also fire it repeatedly. And I get the feeling that nowadays people wouldn't do that in a movie.
Probably not, unless it's being intentionally done as an over-the-top satire, which I guess in a way this was.
So, Nick, I heard that this film was marketed in other countries as more of a Ghostbusters-type adventure comedy rather than as a Christmas Carol retelling.
Yeah, because, well, Bill Murray is best known for Ghostbusters, probably. Arguably. I'm sure some people might disagree. People had, like, the ghosts strike back or the ghosts get revenge, or, like, the tagline somehow was they're trying to attach it to, like, Ghostbusters when it had nothing to do with Ghostbusters.
Absolutely nothing. Different director, different screenwriter, different cinematographer, etc., etc.
Although it seems like in a lot of other countries, and those of you listening who live in other countries that are outside North America, it seems like they do that with a lot of movies. Like, they'll change a title or something to make it more marketable in that country by, you know, attaching it to something it isn't, you know, necessarily attached to.
I've seen that before as well, and I got the example. I've got an example on the tip of my tongue, but I can't think of what it is, so it's no big deal. It might sound like I'm talking up this movie a lot, but I actually should say that rewatching this, and this is the first time I've watched it since I was a kid, this is the second time I've ever seen it, I was not impressed overall with the movie.
Really?
I really enjoy the first half. I think that once we get to the scenes with the Ghost of Christmas Present, the movie starts to become irritating to me and starts to run out of steam.
Really?
Yes.
That's very interesting.
Yes.
Mostly because I think the scene with the Ghost of Christmas Present is the highlight of the movie. I really love the interaction between Bill Murray and Carol Kane as the bubbly airhead but very kind of dark type character at the same time, played by Carol Kane. I just think it's absolutely hysterical that the way that those two interact and how it goes down. So
well,
I found that interesting.
To me, it's the most irritating scene that I can think of in a movie in my mind right now, and I just want to, like, reach into the TV and just slap Carol Kane silly because she just is so irritating to me. I can't take it.
Huh, that's interesting. That's interesting. I respect your opinion, but I'm going to have to disagree with that.
I do also think that some of the scenes where he's, like, watching his brother and his brother's wife and he's thinking about the times when he was, what's the name of the ridiculous dog character that he played the dog character?
Oh, Frisbee.
Frisbee.
Show?
Yeah, I think it was Frisbee. I think you're right about that. I think those are a bit too sentimental, and the tonal shifts are kind of bizarre to me. And I understand that he's, you know, learning his life lessons and so forth as that's going on, but I don't know, they're done weird for me. I don't buy it. I can't get into it.
Huh. See, that never bothered me. Maybe it's just because I'm giving more credit to the A Christmas Carol, the Charles Dickens story, which had similar beats, of course.
Right.
Maybe that's why I never noticed it, let alone it bothering me. But that I don't know. It always seemed to work for me.
I even wrote in my notes here that the slapstick in those scenes really starts to wear on me, so much so that I wish I could just completely cut that out from the whole movie.
You see, I think they did it enough to where it didn't go over the top for me. I mean, yeah, there's slapstick. It's definitely very different from the ghost that precedes her and, of course, follows her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just does not bother me. I don't know. I can't say otherwise. I can't explain it otherwise beyond that.
I think I'm also really annoyed by Carol Kane's voice as well. She's got a very squeaky voice.
That's true. And again, see, for me, I thought that fit the character, because she's playing this sort of...
like ditzy, airhead.
Yeah, ditzy, airhead, like think Tinkerbell, if Tinkerbell is a little bit more of a bitch.
If Tinkerbell had, like, ADHD or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it sets up the best line, my favorite line in the movie, and I know my dad loves this line. He quotes it year-round.
Which is?
The bitch hit me with a toaster.
There are some solid cameos in this film, I think.
I was hoping we were going to get around to talking about that.
When I started the movie up, because I had completely forgotten about this, so it was a huge surprise. So the opening scene with Lee Majors, like, storming the Santa Claus workshop is absolutely brilliant. Brilliant. There's some great satire of Schwarzenegger-style 80s action films, and the fact that they got the $6 million man to come in and do that just adds a layer of irony to it that is just particularly delicious.
Yeah, I'm going to confession here, Zach. As you may or may not know, about a year or two ago when I was teaching, I taught a class, novel to film, and we were attempting to do in that class. We were looking at, you know, books and then... comparing them to the film counterpart, and one of the stories that we did was A Christmas Carol, specifically so I could show them this movie. When we were watching the movie in the class, the opening scene, like, the kids aren't knowing what to expect, and they have, mm-hmm. like, these confused looks on their face, because, like, why is there Santa? What's going on? And the minute, like, a bomb explodes in Santa's workshop, and Santa opens up this... Santa opens up his drawer to reveal all these guns and semi-automatic weapons. Like, the kids just, like, lose it. Because that's, like, who thinks of Santa being, like, armed to the teeth?
Yeah, it's really funny and really clever. It also seems to be Richard Donner playing a bit on his image as a director as well, because he is known for directing kind of over-the-top violent movies. The Lethal Weapon movies being the perfect example of that. We should talk about how there are long-standing rumors that Richard Donner and Bill Murray feuded over the film. My guess is that Donner was more than likely not amused by Murray's well-known penchant for improvising lines. Probably wanted Murray to stick to the script maybe a little bit. I don't really know.
Knowing Richard Donner, I mean, I take that back. I don't know him, but knowing of him, be it in interviews and stuff I've read about him and things like that, he seems to be a very, I hesitate using the term egocentric, because I don't think he's necessarily that, but he's very much like, this is my vision, no one else can tell me no.
He's very professional.
To a fault. As most people know, Richard Donner, of course, directed the first Superman movie. What they may not know is that he directed about 75% of the sequel before a big falling out with the film's producers, and they had someone else come in and...
Richard Lester
to, like, refilm some things and blah, blah, blah. A few years back, they finally released the quote-unquote Donner cut, which restored his original footage, and they tried to patch the film up as close as they could to what they were going to release under the supervision of Richard Donner. And a lot of during the interviews there, he never referenced the other director by name. He always referred to him as the other director.
Right.
And he may not be like this, but he came off as very hostile towards Richard Lester, even though Lester had nothing to do with his falling out with the original producers.
Now, what's thought-provoking to me regarding Richard Donner is the fact that the guy has not really done much in Hollywood for, like, the past 10 to 12 years or so.
Yeah, he's... no.
Which tells me that Hollywood is probably fed up with his douchebaggery and that he's not going to he's not going to make another big budget action spectacular ever again. But I hear a lot of negative things about Bill Murray as well, such as the rumors revolving around his recent divorce, the fights that he's gotten into with other actors and other directors. I hear that he's notoriously difficult to work with, that he's rude to his fans.
I've heard all the same things, I guess, to the point where I guess he and Harold Ramis of Ghostbusters fame played Egon. They used to be very, very tight. I mean, they starred in a string of movies, of course.
Right, in the early to mid-80s.
And I guess shortly right after Groundhog Day, which Harold Ramis directed and Bill Murray starred in, they had some sort of falling out and haven't spoken to each other since. And I remember reading an article over the summer, Harold Ramis's Year One came out, and someone asked him about Bill Murray, and Ramis was like, you know, I don't know what happened there. And
I even heard rumors that Bill Murray was dissatisfied with the shooting of Groundhog Day as well, which to me just seems kind of incredulous, being that movie is so well regarded, you know. So
yeah,
who knows? Maybe you put Bill Murray and Richard Donner together, these two very professional A-list at the time anyway, Hollywood magnates, and it's just not going to work out.
Maybe that was it, just two dominant personalities, and it just, you know, kaboom.
I should add that I don't like the way that this film ends. I think the ending goes on for far too long. Like he's up there on stage on live TV, and I feel like he's up there way too long, and he's talking, and he's getting the Bobcat Goldthwait character to help him out by threatening people with shotguns.
I will totally grant you that the ending it does kind of go on, and I don't think any, I know it's a fantasy film, but I don't think, if this was real, just to get the setup for your listeners, at the end of the film, Bill Murray, who's now converted to I Love Christmas, he breaks into his network's live performance of A Christmas Carol and pretty much takes over the end of the movie by spreading his joy and love to whoever's watching. And the film, I don't think that any real network would allow that to go on. Like, there's got to be some other kill switch that someone would have turned to, like, cut that off, regardless of how good it ended up being.
And I don't like saying it's not realistic, because the film is not realistic. It's a fantasy film, you know, with ghosts and dead people coming back to
life.
But there's
a suspension of disbelief.
Right. Right.
And if it, like, in any movie, like, there's, like, take the recent Star Trek movie. You have, like, lots of stuff going on, but if something seems too incredulous that breaks even the rules of that fictional universe, then your belief is broken. You're like, I'm not buying into that.
Right. And the best example I can think of with that is in the Star Wars Episode One, where I grant you that it's the Star Wars world and it's a fantastic world. I will give you all that, but there is just no way that young Anakin would have been able to fly that plane up and destroy all that stuff, you know what I mean? It doesn't ring true with the rest of the movie, and that's kind of the problem that I have with the ending. Now, when you couple that with the fact that I already don't like and don't really believe in Bill Murray's transformation, it makes the ending doubly bad for me.
You know, I also have a confession. In all the Christmas carols, like the versions of it, I always have had a hard time believing in Scrooge's transformation. Because it seems like he's still an old miser up until he meets, like, hey, if you don't change your ways, no one's coming to your funeral. Well, I better be good. It seems like, and I think that's just an inherent flaw of the original source material.
Right. I think I've seen The Christmas Carol so many times that it's just hard for me to get involved with it anymore.
It's been done so many times. That's, I think, the problem with it. I mean, that's one of the things I do like about this movie, that, again, like, movies like the Muppet version or Disney version aside, in almost every single version of A Christmas Carol, it's turn of the century, or whenever, I'm not exactly sure what,
like,
Victorian, Elizabethan, I don't know, whatever they call that era.
Like when they're just going into the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah, it's always that era. Scrooge is always depicted with the exact same makeup. It always has the exact same story beats. I mean, even the recent...
The Jim Carrey?
Jim Carrey, Robert Zemeckis film.
Which we should note looks awful, by the way.
I haven't seen it, if I ever will. It seems like it goes over the same story beats. With a movie like this, the fact that they modernized it, with a movie like this, the fact that they modernize it, they give it a, they're making fun of it at the same time while honoring it.
Right.
I think that it gives it a new edge, which I think makes this movie much more refreshing to see after all the other versions of A Christmas Carol that we have out there.
Right, and I can respect it for that, and I think that I've given it a fair, you know, a fair mark in terms of that in that regard. I guess there's just a part of me that is just kind of tired of the formula, and when it gets to this, and I just can't buy into it at this point, I guess. I don't know. This is a movie that when I was a kid, I didn't really like all that much to begin with, but I did think that, you know, okay, it's Bill Murray. I like Bill Murray. Okay, it's kind of cool. And now going back and watching it again, it's like, yeah, okay, I guess it's kind of cool. So it's a movie that I was lukewarm on to begin with, and now I'm kind of less than lukewarm on it.
Okay, then. I don't know what else I don't have anything to add to that. I understand where you're coming from. I really do, but...
You really seem to appreciate this film on a different level than I do.
I think it is. I guess, and maybe it's just our personal tastes in things, Zach, which, admittedly, this is a cult film. Obviously, your name of your place is Culted or Canted, so not everyone's going to care for it. But I think there's a lot of good here, which outweighs a lot of the bad. Like, yeah, it has an over-the-top, sappy ending. They almost make everything too happy for Frank Cross.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see, like, Scrooge, part two, the next day, just to see how his life probably goes to the shitter.
You brought up a good point when you mentioned that this is a cult film, and you're absolutely right. I would definitely say this is a cult film. I do think this film is somewhat forgotten. And as I was watching this and as I was writing up my notes, I made a little notation in here. I said to myself, why did this movie not become one of the big Christmas hit movies like A Christmas Story or The Santa Claus or Christmas Vacation? I mean, every year it seems like I can turn on the TV and one of those three movies is going to be playing around Christmas time, like almost every day up until Christmas. But I almost never see Scrooge, Don.
Yeah, you would think, like, regardless if you like it or hate it, it's so unique that that you're surprised it doesn't have, like, the fan, or seemingly, I don't know, it could be, they just could be quiet, fan following that, like, some of those other movies have.
Exactly. And it was a hit at the time. It did gross a lot of money at the box office. It just seems like it's been somewhat forgotten.
I don't know why. It's bizarre. I guess the only thing I could think of is... maybe people do just kind of lump it in with all the other Christmas carols. Let's face it, like, outside of Bill Murray, there's really no known stars in there. Now, let me preface that by saying there are a ton of stars in here. This cast that they got is fantastic. But when you talk to people like our age, Zach, to their mid to late 20s, you say to people, hey, do you know Buddy Hackett and Lee Majors? They're going to have, like, a blank look on their face.
Yeah, it's
when,
like...
when you talk to, like, our people, like, our parents' age, they're going to know all of these people.
You're right. It appeals to people that are much older than us, and that rings true because it was released 21 years ago. But, I mean, other actors that appear in it, Robert Goulet, John Houseman, one of my favorite character actors, I have a lot of favorite character actors, but... John Glover, who played a character,
yeah.
Bryce Cummings. He's fantastic in the film adaptation of The Chocolate War. I guess that we could, at this point, go ahead and Culter can this film. What do you say?
I think so. I can't think of anything specific else to mention.
All right. I will go ahead and go first, being that I'm the host of the show. I do think that this is a very unique film, despite the fact that it takes the tired formula of the Christmas Carol, Charles Dickens' tale. And I really like Bill Murray's performance. He's got a very manic energy to him. I love the way that he can just riff and that he can just joke and that he's fun and entertaining to watch. And I do think that there are a lot of great cameos in this movie. That being said, watching it this time, it just didn't hold my interest. It's a cult movie for a reason. Not everybody is going to like a cult movie. And you made a good point earlier when you brought that up, Nick. So I'm just going to have to say that I have to can this movie. I do still appreciate this movie for what it tries to do, and that's one of the reasons why we reevaluate these films.
My turn?
Yep, your turn.
I see what you're saying. I agree with a couple of things that you said earlier about how, like, the ending kind of goes on. It gets a little too happy, sappy for probably a lot of people's tastes. But on the flip side, it's also a Christmas movie, and they're probably, I bet that was intentionally done just to give in that happy, sappy feeling that Frank Cross is apparently feeling. However, that being said, I think the movie is very, very original, an original take on A Christmas Carol, and I think I watch it at least once a year around Christmas time because it's that type of movie for me. I'm going to have to cult this movie. I think it's worth seeing.
So there you have it. We've got it one up, one down on Scrooged. And I should say that now people are going to probably call me Scrooge for not liking Scrooged. I'm not opposed to sentimental holiday films. Not one bit. I've explained my position.
Well, at least you did it calmer than an internet fanboy would.
Right.
And you brought, facts and reasonable arguments.
Well, I can appreciate what this film tries to do. It's a unique retelling of a tired formula, and I can appreciate that. So, for the Cult It or Can It podcast, I am Zach. My co-host tonight was...
Nick.
Nick, thank you for joining us in a reevaluation of Scrooged. Please visit our blog at cultitorcanit.blogspot.com. We are also available on Gmail. You can mail us at cultitorcanit@gmail.com. Leave us some recommendations for future films. Let us know what you think of the podcast. I am always looking for co-hosts to help me navigate through the mired and muddy visions that directors often bring to what we call cult films. I will note that I am going to be going on vacation here over my Christmas break, so the blog will be updated only sporadically until I return, but fear not, because I will eventually be back with weekly updates. So this has been a special Christmas presentation of Cult It or Can It. Nick, is there any final Christmas thought for the listeners out there? Nick, how about this? God bless us, everyone.
Oh, God. And we're done.